taking their place in a long true line of everyday Americans,
helping to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. This is the Constitution Study on the America Out Loud Network with your host, Paul Engel.
Pay the bills, stay out of jail, love the neighbors and have a few good friends. Every day you are everyday Americans.
Hello there, everyday Americans. You've joined the Constitution Study. This is where we read and study the Constitution. We teach the rising generation to be free. Glad you could join me today. I'm talking about something a little different today. At least I'm starting out that way. I found this article on the Tennessee Star, and it talks about a family tracking app. What's it called? Life 360. And you know, it's one of those things. Maybe it's because I spent 30 years in IT that I'm surprised at how little people understand of what they are giving up when they use these devices, when they put so much of their information out online, when they depend on these devices and services as part of their life. Now, Life 360, as I understand it, is it's a family location app. And the idea was simple. Parents want to know where their kids are. Granted, when I was a kid, we didn't have cell phones. You know, my job was to, let my mother know where I was going to be. And the rule around our house is, if plans change, especially if you're going to be late, you let mom know. You call and you let people know. Nothing was worse than coming home late without having warned them that you were going to be late. But now we have technology, and this company offered what seems to be a reasonable service that people would be interested in. You put this app on your children's phone, and you can find out where they are. It's a great way for parents to feel safer, but they never think of, well, how does it work? Well, the answer is simple. See, the application on the child's cell phone is tracking the child's location, and it uploads that to Life 360 servers. The cloud, as it's often referred to. There's all that information out there in the cloud, and then your app, the parent side of the app, can go in and say, okay, let's take a look at this data. Now, that means in order for this to work, Life 360 has to have access to the location of any child or any phone you put this application on. Now, when you get an application like this, there's usually some sort of privacy policy or terms and conditions you have to agree to. And apparently nobody reads these. I know I don't read them, but it says things like the privacy policy specifically says that Life 360 sells, quote, identifiers, internet network information, geolocation, inferences, and other personal information, including driving events and movements, to third parties. Yeah, the whole idea is the company that creates this sells this data to help fund it. Now, I don't know if Life 360 charges the parents and users for their application or not. I've never used anything like it. But obviously, they don't hide it. Of course, they don't broadcast it, but they don't hide it to say that they're selling information about where your kids are. Again, identifiers. Well, how old is a child? I don't know. What information do they collect? Geolocation, driving information, other data. They're selling this information. There's a simple adage out on the internet. If you don't pay for the application, if you don't pay for the product, you are the product. So why am I bringing this up? Well, the fact that Life 360 is selling this information really shouldn't be a surprise to anyone. But I want people to stop and think about what we call our right to privacy. You know, the Fourth Amendment says you have a right to be secure in your persons, houses, papers, and effects from unreasonable search and seizure. But what happens when we voluntarily give our data to some company? We can't really then complain when they use that data. And we can only complain that they share the data if we have an agreement between us, the application owners, that says they won't. So when the company's privacy policy says quite clearly that it's going to share this data, you really shouldn't be surprised when they share the data. And you shouldn't be surprised either that one of the customers or several of the customers are parts of the federal government. Now, the CEO of Life360, Chris Hulls, told the Markup, the magazine that reported this, that the company has a policy in place preventing any customer data from being sold to the federal government, but apparently it's not true. Either they don't have the policy or they don't follow the policy. So it begs the question, who do you trust with data about you and your family? And let's take that to the next level. If you have a cell phone, you are wearing an eavesdropping and tracking device. Now, don't feel bad. I have a cell phone. I have a cell phone with me almost all the time. It's become an integral part of my life for many, many years. Yes, it's a phone, but let's face it, smartphones nowadays are so much more. It's my personal assistant. I refer to it sometimes as my little black brain, because if it doesn't go in there, it doesn't happen. People who know me will know, you know, I'll be in the middle of something and I'll have to stop and take a note or write down a reminder or something to make sure that I don't miss things. And it's very convenient, right? Because that information gets shared with my desktop and my laptop and my tablet. And it's all very convenient, but I recognize that that means all that data is shared, in my case, with Apple. Now, I use Apple rather than Android for one really specific reason. In all the reports I've seen, Apple shares less data about you than Android does. Android's owned by Google, by ABC, the company that owns Google. And companies that deal with cell phone security have taken both phones, and they do things like, you know, turn off location tracking and all that stuff. And then at the end of the day, they track what data the phone sends and where it sends it. And what they find is that, well, yeah, the iPhone and the iPad and similar devices send some data to Apple. The amount of data sent to Google is 10 to 100 times more. So the compromise I'm willing to live with is, yes, I have a cell phone. Yes, I have a tablet. Yes, they are with me most of the time. But I don't put anything private on there. In other words, I drive my accountant crazy because he wants me to use an online accounting program. Now, granted, an online accounting program would make my life so much easier. I could tie it into my website. I could tie it into my cell phone. And I could do business without having to manually replicate data over and over and over again. But do I trust that company with my data, with my financial data? Now, part of, you know, on the one hand, you know, I'm sure the company does a lot of work to prevent intrusions, to prevent hacking. But watch the news, hacking happens. And being a large financial company, well, that company would be an excellent target for hackers. But it's even worse than that. Because what's to stop this company? And I'm not naming the company because I'm not picking on that one company. This is true of pretty much any company you do business with. What's to stop them from replying to a federal subpoena? See, the Amazon and Googles and Apples and all that, if they receive a subpoena for data about you, well, they're almost assuredly going to turn it over because there's no advantage of them to fight it. You know, sure, should the government require a warrant? Yes, the Fourth Amendment says for a search to be reasonable, if it's not exigent, meaning if it's not urgent, well, then you need a warrant, and the warrant has to be specific. But let's face it, if you're a corporation, what advantage is it to you to piss off the federal government? There isn't, so they turn it over. This also brings up another interesting question for all of these home assistants. I see, you know, it's Christmas time is coming up, so all the ads are out, and you've got the different, you know, home assistants, you've got the security cameras and the doorbells and the smart homes and all of this stuff. And I admit, that stuff would be great. I could easily see advantages in these products, except for one thing. It requires opening every aspect of my life to be recorded by somebody else. If you have an Alexa or a HomePod or the Google Assistant, if you have anything that you talk to do something for you, it's listening to you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Now, how can you complain about being secure against unreasonable searches when you're basically putting that data out there in the first place? Same thing with these, you know, smart doorbell systems, these front door security systems. They are photographing, they're videoing your front door 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and then sending that data to the company's servers to process for all the neat features you have, like, you know, hey, warning somebody is here, or, you know, hey, warning somebody is stealing your package off the front door. All that's not done in the device. All that is done on the company's servers. So as Americans, we need to decide what's more important to us. Is it our convenience or our privacy? And the Life 360 article to me was just, well, it's just an opportunity to remind Americans that there are costs and benefits to every decision we make. If you want to have one of these devices, be my guest, by all means. Just understand that you are sharing your life with a third party. And that third party has no reason to protect information about you from government snooping. And almost assuredly, it has shared information about you with the government. That's the nature of the beast. That's how all of these work. And in fact, there's an article, I found this one in the Epoch Times, that reports on a document that came out of a Freedom of Information Act request, requested by Property of the People, which basically says, listen, the FBI can access whatever's in your, can access information about you from these supposedly secure messaging apps in about 15 minutes. Now, according to the report, if you use Apple's iMessage, they can collect the metadata. Apparently, they're not getting the data itself, but they are getting the metadata. And also, by the way, from WhatsApp, in as little as 15 minutes. Now, apparently they have a harder time getting the data itself because it's end-to-end encrypted, meaning the encryption keys exist on your endpoint devices and they don't share them. They're not shared with the company so that they can't share them with the FBI. But I like the way it's interesting. The document from the FBI details its ability to, quote unquote, lawfully access secure messaging apps. They're accessing both the content and the metadata. Now, that's the lawfully part that disturbs me. Because again, the Fourth Amendment says you have a right to be secure from unreasonable search and seizure. Now, I know the courts have interpreted this as privacy, and in their mind, if you share this data with a third party, it's no longer private, therefore it's no longer covered by the Fourth Amendment, which is utter hogwash. See, the Fourth Amendment doesn't say you simply have a right to privacy as long as you keep the data private. It says you have a right to be secure from an unreasonable search. So what makes a search reasonable? Well, it's got to be based on probable cause. At least that's what our founding fathers believed, because that's the standard for a warrant. The understanding is there are only two exceptions. There are two things that make a search reasonable. Either you have a warrant or you've got an exigent or an urgent circumstance. But what we see here is the law, quote-unquote law, has been manipulated, in many cases through judicial opinion, through what's referred to as a third-party doctrine, into saying, listen, if you don't, you know, keep this locked inside your house, the government can snoop. It can search. It's reasonable to search if you don't secure it. It puts the onus on the citizen to hide their data rather than putting the onus on government to show that they have a probable cause to search the data. Now, personally, I think this is a violation of the Fourth Amendment. Personally, one of the few things I'd like to see is an amendment to the Constitution that expands the Fourth Amendment to include not only your persons, houses, papers, and effects, but any data generated by you or any data generated about you. Wouldn't mind seeing that. But even with what we have now, persons, houses, papers, and effects. Effects is everything you own. Now, there's a lot of discussion when we talk about like Life 360. Well, you don't own that data. That data is about you, but it's not your data. You didn't create it. Life 360 created it through their app. It's their data. However, when they're tracking messaging apps, that's your data. You generated the content. You created the message. You sent it to someone. That should be secure from an unreasonable search and seizure. But again, courts have repeatedly shown they are much more interested in making government's life easier than they are in actually protecting the rights of the American people. I'm not saying they never do it, but if you look at a lot of the opinions, if the government can search your messages without a warrant based on probable cause supported by oath or affirmation, well, then it's not lawful because it violates the supreme law of the land, the Constitution of the United States. But you see, most people look at this and they don't think about, well, what does it mean? How do we deal with this? Though the proper answer is the people at the FBI who are collecting this data, well, they should be charged with a crime. Because Title 18 of the United States Code, Section 242, says it's a crime to knowingly deprive someone of a right protected by the Constitution under color of law, rule, regulation. So they're depriving you of a right to be secure from unreasonable searches and seizures. They pretty much know they're doing it. And they're doing it under color of law or regulation. In other words, all of this is actually criminal, but you're asking the federal government to charge the federal government with a crime. And for some strange reason, they don't seem ready to do that. But while you're supposed to be protected from unreasonable searches, the government's supposed to be open and transparent. The information that the government collects is supposed to be publicly available and really should only be not available when you're dealing with a real state secret. For example, Article 1, Section 5 says, each house shall keep a journal of its proceedings and from time to time publish the same, except such parts as may in their judgment require secrecy. Well, what the problem is, what happens when the people that are potentially acting badly decide that that information needs to be kept secret to protect their own backsides? And what happens when it's not just Congress? You see, there's been a lot going on in Loudoun County, Virginia. It has been a hotbed of controversy around the schools. Now, a parent in Loudoun County filed a FOIA request with the Loudoun County Public Schools there's an understanding, I guess, I don't remember if it's in the law or not, that reasonable fees for the production of that data can be charged, right? So if you've got to produce 500 pages, 1,000 pages worth of documents, cost of printing that type of stuff. Well, except now that parent's being asked to pay $36,000 to retrieve public records. See, the request was made by a Michelle Mergie. I'm sorry if I'm mispronouncing your name. I'm sure I am. And she asked for all communications, including press releases, statements, emails, or other correspondence in any form within LCPS possession that used the word sexual assault or rape between the dates of May 1st and October 18th, 2021. Well, this has to deal with the charge of rape and cover-up within the Loudoun County Public School System. Now, I'm not sure how this is to be delivered, but why would it cost $36,000 to put this document together, to put this information together? Now, according to Wade Byard, the Loudoun County Public Schools Public Information Officer, says there's over 100,000 potential documents that fall under the request, and the hourly rate for reviewing these documents is $72.15 an hour. hey, where can I get that job? Where can I make $72 an hour for reviewing documents? That sounds pretty good. But again, according to Mr. Baird, the public information officer, the retrieving of these documents would take half an hour work by the supervisor of information technology. That's about $36. And to review these documents at a rate of 200 documents an hour, it's estimated to take 500 hours, which, if performed by their public information officer at $72.15 an hour, comes out to $36,111.68 to fulfill the request. Now, I'm immediately hit by two things. One is, if there are potentially 100,000 documents, that's a lot of documents. That's a lot of discussion of rape and sexual assault in the Loudoun County Public School. And I don't know the size of the school. I don't know if it's an exceeding amount. It seems like a large number to me. But, you know, they've got it's a large school district, multiple schools. There may be some stuff in there. $72 an hour, that seems rather excessive. I mean, I don't know what they pay the IT staff and the public information officer. I'm sure it's a fraction of $72.15 an hour. So where do the other costs from? See, and why is the government not on the hook to simply provide at least some basic information for free? I mean, we pay taxes, don't we? Shouldn't there be some more reasonable rate of review? Shouldn't there be some? Now, I understand the need to review, right? That you don't want to have documents that have personal identifying information in them. That would need to be redacted out. I understand that. But my question is $72 an hour reasonable for someone to go through that? And shouldn't the school board, shouldn't the government have some, you know, minimum amount that they I don't want to say subsidize, that they absorb as part of being a government entity, producing documents? This goes to show me that we need more work, I think, on the FOIA laws. This idea that, you know, if what the government does is supposed to be out in public, it has to be available to the public, not simply legally, but financially as well. So these are all, to me, these are concerns about government hiding information. So you got government collecting information. Now we got government hiding information. Well, for example, the FDA originally said it was going to need something like 50 years. Now it says it's going to need 75 years to release the information, the data that was behind the approval of the Pfizer COVID-19 quote-unquote vaccine. Now, again, I understand the need to do some review of the data, right? This is, you know, the Pfizer, BioNTech were required to provide confidential information as part of the approval process. But 75 years? 75 years before the people will able to have all the data to determine if the FDA followed the rules when they approved this, when they issued the emergency use authorization, which, by the way, I can prove to you that they didn't, because the law that authorizes an emergency use authorization requires there to be, well, an emergency. And the only emergency we have is in the minds of the politicians and the pundits. COVID just isn't that deadly. This is not the Spanish flu. This is not smallpox. But the data behind it, what testing did the FDA put through? How hard of a review did they put this through before they experimented on the American people? They expect the people to wait 75 years. See, now the FDA is requesting a court to give them that much time because they said, hey, you know, they're actually working at a little more than 500 pages per month. Per month. Now, let's say on average there are about 20 working days in a month, right? It's usually a bit more or less, but we'll give them the benefit of that. We'll say there's 20 working days a month. So if they can do 500 pages a month in 20 days, Well, that's 25 pages a day. What kind of review were they doing that takes them a day to do 25 pages? How many people do they have working on it? You know, how much effort are they actually putting into providing this information? And the other problem, they said that, well, they found 59,000 more pages than mentioned. Well, part of my question is, how did the FDA go through all of this data in order to approve the vaccine? If it's going to take them 75 years to review it for release to the public, well, how much time do they take to review it before they release the drug to the public? Has anybody ever thought of that? See, this is what happens when we allow government to determine what information and when and how they'll release information to the public. To me, the problem we have here is you have a government that thinks that these requests are, well, just something they have to fulfill to keep the little people quiet. They don't see you as their boss. They don't see you as the master of congresses and courts. They see this as a nuisance. And this is a nuisance that, well, they just figure they're going to have to deal with, but they're going to slow roll it. I am sure, since it didn't take them anywhere near 75 years, it didn't take them 75 months, it didn't take them 75 weeks to review this information before releasing this gene therapy on the public. There's something wrong in the system. Either they are slow walking it now, or they rush the approval. The question is, will the judge give them that much time for shenanigans? That much time to weed through, parse through, and hide the information they really don't want people to see? Will they really give the FDA, which took, it took less than a year to approve this gene therapy, this never before used on humans in mass, but they'll take 75 years to let the people know the data they used to approve it. I don't know. That just sounds fishy. There's most definitely something not right. Now, I have to head off to a break. Before I do, please head over to constitutionstudy.com. Check out the articles. Check out the videos. Ask a question. I'm still putting together my next Q&A segment. So if you have a question, go to constitutionstudy.com. There's an Ask a Question button. Fill out the form. Just check the box that says you want me to answer it on America Out Loud Talk Radio, and I will answer it in a future Q&A segment. I love answering questions, so please do that. But you can also sign up for the newsletter. You can support the work that we're doing here, or you can simply read and share the information you find there. It's all absolutely free. Also, please head over to healthycell.com. You know, vitamins, well, they needed an upgrade, and Healthy Cell has done that. They've reinvented the vitamin to work better at the cellular level to do things like boost your immune system, help you sleep, help you focus, basically to help you live a better life. Forget the pills. It's a travel-ready gel pack. You can just take the shot right out of the pack or mix it in food or water. And, you know, now you can get the vitamins you need quickly and easily. And as an America Out Loud listener, you get 20% off your first order. For example, using the Immune Super Boost to help keep your immune system strong. Whether it's COVID, the flu, or just the common cold, the best way to keep up and active is to have a healthy immune system. And Healthy Cell's Immune Super Boost really does make a difference. So check that out or any of their formulas. Again, go to healthycell.com and use the code OUTLOUD at checkout to get 20% off your first order.
Well, my fellow Americans, how did you feel watching footage on the news of domestic terrorists looting our stores and burning our cities down? You were probably disgusted and angry as much as I was. It's disturbing what's going on. Well, you'd be shocked to know that your shopping habits supporting these extremists. companies like Amazon, Nike, Disney, FedEx. It's an endless list. And they've been supporting these radical groups. Let's stop supporting companies that fund these extremist groups. We can all do our part. Visit shoptotheright.com and you'll find businesses in a nationwide database and companies that are aligned with our American values. Visit shoptotheright.com and let's all make a difference.
In 2008, the amount of concentrated time people could spend on a task without becoming distracted was 12 seconds. 5 years later, it was only 8 seconds, 1 second less than a goldfish. If you find yourself always distracted or having trouble recalling information, you're likely to fall behind in the demanding, fast-paced 21st century. In other words, brain performance is more critical now than ever. Boost your brain power with Healthy Cells Focus Plus Recall. Science-backed nootropics to sharpen focus, concentrate longer, enhance recall, improve mental speed, learn rapidly, and be more alert. It's a pill-free brain supplement made with maximum absorption technology, designed to feed our brains at the cellular level. Take it for a test drive. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order of Focus Plus Recall. That's HealthyCell.com. Code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
It was a vision that gave birth to a unique multimedia platform that would combine classic talk radio, great writers, and memorable podcasts and videos. AmericaOutloud.com is a conservative leader in a field that is predominantly run by far-left progressive globalists. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. You've rejoined the Constitution Study. This is where we read and study the Constitution. We teach the rising generation to be free. I spent the first half talking about things like, well, privacy and access to governmental information. There's a couple other articles I want to track down that, well, they have a slightly different tack. For example, we have a Molly Page Mamou. She's a board director member at the National Education Association and an English teacher at a Pennsylvania high school who apparently took to Facebook to condemn and accuse people who have not been vaccinated due to their religious exemptions as, quote, hiding behind religious exemptions because they don't want anybody to tell them what to do, close quote. Well, all right. I want to be blunt. That's what I do here is I try to be blunt. I'm sure there are people that are hiding behind religious exemptions. Now, I'm also just as sure that there are many people who have real religious beliefs and have religious reasons not to get the jab. And I'm sure there are others that are just using it for convenience. That's human nature. But where Ms. Mamou went, it went pretty dark. And I think part of the reason is, well, a lack of transparency of information. See, apparently Ms. Mamou was referring to a specific person when she said he and his ilk deserve whatever comes their way, including losing jobs, getting sick, perhaps dying from this virus. But in the meantime, he's going to put all the people around him in danger. Really, Ms. Mamou, would you like to show me the scientifically useful study that shows that unvaccinated people can transmit COVID to vaccinated people? Wait a second. I thought the whole idea was a vaccine was you couldn't catch it. So if the unvaccinated people are passing it to anyone, shouldn't they be passing it only to vaccinated people, Ms. Mamou? Again, if they wish to risk getting sick from the virus, a virus, by the way, they have a between 98 and 99% chance of surviving, isn't that their decision, Ms. Mamou? You say they're putting all the people around in danger. Oh, so Ms. Mamou, you're telling me that the vaccine doesn't work. Because if the vaccine actually, the quote-unquote vaccine actually worked, well, they wouldn't be in danger if an unvaccinated person was around them. But then it got really dark. She said, quote, I don't know why the GOP doesn't just take those guns they profess to love so much and just start shooting all of their constituents who think this way. It would be quicker and ultimately safer than putting me and my friends and my family at risk. So, again, the cognitive dissonance that says the vaccines work except they don't. Or, as you know, to paraphrase the movie Moneyball and the book Moneyball, if the vaccine's so good at preventing people getting sick, why doesn't it prevent people from getting sick? That aside, to suggest not only that you would wish them people to get sick and die is bad enough. To suggest they should be shot because they disagree with you, that is a very dark place. That is a person with a, to me, a serious mental issue. Now, I'm not a psychiatrist. I don't play one on TV. But if you think that people who disagree with you should die, that does seem to be some rather antisocial behavior. Now, maybe this person is just venting. Let's face it, on the keyboard, we will say things that we would never say to someone in person. But doesn't that mean this person's thinking this? And if she's really so worried about, oh, friends and family, could it possibly be that some of her friends and family may decide for one reason or another not to take the jab? Should they be shot as well? There are plenty of examples in history of this type of, well, you know, that's just somebody venting, being over the top, where that stops being over the top and starts being put in place, where people are shot for not complying with some government edict or dictate. And it's not simply, you know, and yes, wanting people shot because they disagree with you is an extreme example, but it's not the only one. See, there's a prep school in California called Barack Obama Global Prep Academy. It's part of Los Angeles Unified School District. And there are parents claiming that someone at the school, well, a parent claims that someone at the school vaccinated her 13-year-old without permission. In fact, a California mom says her son's school district offered him pizza in exchange for getting the vaccine, the shot. It's not really a vaccine, but the shot. But it was also reported that the lady that gave him the shot and signed the paper told my son, please don't say anything. I don't want to get in trouble. Now listen, I would never request that someone that was willing to, not, you know, to conduct medical experiments on children should be summarily taken out and shot. I would not recommend that. I'm not that crazy NEA director. I'm not saying they should be on. What I am saying is they should be arrested. They should be charged. They should be tried. And if found guilty, they should be punished. This is assault. This is endangering a minor. And she knew what she was doing was wrong because this person said, don't say anything. I don't want to get in trouble. She knew what she was doing was wrong. Now, the LA Unified School District spokesperson told, well, the Daily Caller, that they were currently unable to confirm that this incident occurred at Barack Obama Global Preparation Academy. All right, well, what are you doing to find out if it did happen? And how often did it happen? How many students were vaccinated without their parental consent? How many instances of assault and endangering a minor happened at this school? Now, according to the LAUSD, 80% of eligible students by Thanksgiving had received the shot. How many of them did so without the parents' consent? This is the type of stuff that we can't allow to be hidden. And this shouldn't be simply the LAUSD. This should be a police matter. This is not simply a question of policy. This is a question of physical assault, battery, endangering the welfare of a minor. this person could not legally take this child off campus to get ice cream without the parents' consent. Can't give the child an aspirin without the parents' consent. But gave this child, apparently, an experimental drug. Dear God, what have we come to? That this happens doesn't shock me, doesn't surprise me a bit. That I've seen no reports of a criminal investigation does. They don't. You know, this shocks me that parents in California truly believe that the school district knows better what there should be done for their children. They're willing to let their children be assaulted without their consent. That scares me. Another example of, well, let's just, you know, we'll just hide the sausage a bit. We'll hide the sausage making. Now, many know that every few years we go through this big scare about the debt ceiling and shutting down the government, except you never actually really shut down the government. They furlough, quote-unquote, non-essential workers. My question is, if they're non-essential, why are they there in the first place? But leave that as it may. We never actually shut it down. It's a political campaign. Well, apparently, people are getting tired of it. Because the House passed a bill that would allow Congress to raise the debt ceiling with a simple majority vote. You see, by Senate procedure, a debate on a bill goes on until they can invoke cloture. And a cloture vote requires 60 senators to vote. It's, you know, three-fifths of the Senate to approve stopping debate and going on to an actual vote on the bill. This law, which, again, has passed the House, not the Senate, would basically change that to make debt ceiling increases a simple majority vote, meaning whatever party was in power in the Senate would be able to increase the debt ceiling without getting anything from the other side. Now, there may be people out there going, well, great, then we won't have to deal with these problems anymore. Doesn't anyone else see a problem with a Congress that has already spent us, was it, $27 trillion into debt? $27 million in debt. And we're just going to let them raise a debt ceiling. I mean, we all have credit cards, right? And there's a spending limit on it. There's a limit. There's a credit limit. Imagine if you could just say, well, you know what? We're just going to keep adding up that credit limit. We'll just add it. Whenever we need it, we'll just add more. It'd make your life really easy until somebody actually had to pay off the debt. I think this is a bad idea because it simply encourages more profligate spending on things that Congress is not authorized to spend money on. Face it, if Congress only appropriated money for things that were authorized to in the Constitution, our deficit would be gone tomorrow, and our debt would be gone in about 10 to 15 years. Yes, that's right. $27, $28 trillion debt would be gone in about 10 to 15 years if we merely held our House of Representatives to spending only what is authorized by the Constitution of the United States. They followed the law. If they followed their oath, this wouldn't be a problem. Instead, we're going to take a drug addict and we're going to give them unlimited access to heroin. Well, that's basically what we're doing. Congress is drunk on money and we're just give them an unlimited credit limit. The credit limit basically means nothing if whatever party's in power can simply, you know, raise it. Doesn't mean anything. Why don't we just hand out fentanyl capsules to all the drug addicts? Because that's basically what the House bill would do. Let's just make it easier for them to spend money they're not legally authorized to do. And while we're talking about what Congress is authorized to do, this scam investigative panel over the January 6th non-event, right? Minor event. As it's predicted, it is completely out of control. It's just fishing for money, for documents. It's fishing for anything. It is looking for a crime it can charge someone with. The direct opposite of due process. And now there are people that are starting to push back. For example, the attorney for Roger Stone says he will not appear before the House of Representatives panel. Now, he is invoking his Fifth Amendment right not to testify. The Fifth Amendment says he has a right to not against self-witness. So, he has a right to remain silent. But here's the thing. In a statement, it says, given that the Select Committee's demand for documents is overbroad, overreaching, and far too wide-ranging to be deemed anything other than a fishing expedition, Mr. Stone has a constitutional right to decline to respond. Indeed, the Select Committee seeks an imprecise and undefined category of documents and communications concerning a broad range of constitutionally protected political activity. What have I been saying all along? Congress does not legally have subpoena power because Congress is not an investigative branch of government. It is a legislative branch of government. That if Congress needs data, needs documents for an actual legislative process, well, they need to go to court and get a warrant. But that warrant has to be based on probable cause, supported by oath or affirmation, something that they don't have here. This Select Committee, like so many others, is nothing but a political witch hunt. It's a political hatchet job. And I'm glad to see that there are some people that are willing to stand up. Now, I don't agree with Mr. Stone's necessarily with his Fifth Amendment right not to testify. It's a Fifth Amendment right, a right protected by the Fifth Amendment against self-witness. He could certainly show up and say, I refuse to answer, period. I have a right to not, you say I have a right to remain silent? I'm remaining silent. I have a right to not witness against myself? I will not witness anything that I can be involved in. Nope, thank you very much. Have a good day. Waste my time. I'd much rather see a lawyer say, Congress doesn't have a constitutionally authorized subpoena power. Therefore, this subpoena is null and void and of no power. And, oh, by the way, should any member of the federal executive attempt to punish someone for failing to appear to an illegal subpoena, they're committing a federal crime. And I'd love to see a U.S. attorney say we will prosecute. Now, again, Mr. Stone is just the latest. Recently, Mark Meadows warned that he will not appear before the committee, and now the committee wants to cite him for contempt. Now, it's interesting because the committee warned that they will cite him for contempt if he does not appear. The committee doesn't have prosecutorial powers. At best, they could ask the DOJ to cite him for failure to appear to a warrant, but then they'd have to show that the warrant is valid. So I've told the story before. I received a federal subpoena. It was an interesting experience. I was asked to testify in a case involving a previous employer. I don't have a problem with a U.S. attorney issuing a subpoena for someone to appear in, for a case. It was not overbroad. It was specific. They asked me to show up on a specific day or on a range of dates to be available to testify in court. I thought that was a reasonable request. I was more than willing to comply as long as my rights were protected. But as soon as I told them that I wouldn't take the jab and I wouldn't take the COVID test, they suddenly didn't want me to show up anymore. But Congress, this idea that Congress suddenly believes they have the power to cite someone for not bowing to them when they say show up, this is Congress out of control. This is, if the Department of Justice truly was a Department of Justice, they would be citing members of this select committee for intimidation, for, I don't know. I don't know the exact legal term. It's not coming to me. But they're exercising, they are certainly violating the rights protected by the Constitution against unreasonable search and seizure. You don't, Congress, you don't have the right to demand that I show up. You don't. We did not authorize that. We did not give it to you. You don't have it. And I want to see more people stand up, but I'd love to see them stop hiding behind the Fifth Amendment. I'd love to see lawyers start standing up and I'd like to see charges filed for an abuse of power, for enacting, for exercising authority and depriving people of rights under color of law that is not legally enacted. But then again, I'm weird. I've actually read the Constitution. And while we're discussing January 6th, Colonel Earl Matthews, former member of the D.C. National Guard, and a high-level Pentagon official during the Trump administration, authored a report criticizing Pentagon's inspector general for what he believes is an error-riddled account created in order to protect top Army officials who argued against sending the National Guard to Capitol Hill. At least this is being reported by Politico. In the memo, Matthews calls General Charles Flynn and Lieutenant General Walter Piot absolute and unmitigated liars for their description of the events of January 6th. On the day of the riots, Matthews was serving as a top attorney for Major General William Walker, then the commanding general of the D.C. National Guard. Walker is now the House Sergeant at Arms. The memo argues that Flynn and Piot, their testimony before Congress were replete with factual inaccuracies, and that the Army's attempt to create its own revisionist history of events of the day worthy of the best Stalinist or North Korean propagandist. Now, this is interesting because Congress has said, listen, it's illegal to lie to Congress. You're under oath, under penalty of perjury. If Colonel Matthews is correct, we had two top generals that perjured themselves before Congress. I don't remember the details of their testimony, but I wonder if that would have impacted the actual progress of the January 6th fiasco, witch trial that we have going on in the House right now. Again, this January 6th thing is a political football. It's political chicanery in order to distract us from everything else that's going on. And speaking of distracting from everything else that's going on, speaking of lying to the American public, Dr. Fauci said the other day that it's not a question of when, of if, but when they will redefine fully vaccinated to include a third booster shot. Now, how many of you have heard over and over again, the vaccine, the quote-unquote vaccine is safe and effective, safe and effective, safe and effective? Well, first of all, it's not a vaccine, at least not the mRNA one. It's gene therapy. Safety is, relatively, although there are very serious risk factors that need to be considered on an individual basis. But how effective is the vaccine if you got to keep getting this shot every few months? And they keep pushing it down the road. Now it's right. It's effective now. We got it now. I heard a report today. They're saying, oh, this one's got it. We got it now. Seems like three's the charm. They said that after the two shots. They said after the third shot. Now, does anybody believe them anymore? Every time they turn and say, we've got it right now. Why do we believe them? They've been wrong so often in the past. It's just a question of, hey, look over here. See, we got it right this time. We got it right this time. Pay no attention to the fact that the reputable studies, the studies that involve actual, scientific evaluation, control groups, randomized tests and stuff like that, shows that the protection wanes relatively quickly, that if you catch COVID after you've been vaccinated, you are just as much, if not more, of a spreader than someone who's never been vaccinated. Doesn't sound effective to me at all. And then one last one. How many remember the all the brouhaha over Biden's committee to pack the Supreme Court. They didn't like its current makeup. They didn't like the opinions they were getting. So they're going to change the rules. We're going to put more of our people on the Supreme Court, turned even to more of a political hatchet job than it already is. And of course, the corporate media, well, they call it mainstream media. We'll just call it corporate media. They were all excited about this. Yay, rah, rah, let's do this. Let's take control of the court, because that's how the progressive have gotten their agenda through over the last several decades, over the last 40, 50 years, is primarily through the courts. So, you know, this is nothing, you know, Biden put together a commission. Oh, yes, we're going to have a commission. We'll figure out what we should do. They voted unanimously to approve a final report that basically said, we can't come to a consensus, so there's nothing we can recommend. I mean, former chief, you know, members of the court, I should say, former federal judges said, Thomas Griffin said, there was much disagreement among the commissioners about the various proposals. For example, I'm opposed to expanding the size of the court, limiting the terms of justices, and stripping the court of any of its current jurisdiction. And the media is silent. Jen Psaki said, all indications are this blue ribbon report will end up, like many others before it, on a shelf. Now, personally, I'm glad that this commission flamed out. I think the idea behind it is a political power grab. But if you don't go looking for it, how do you know that it happened? And that, to me, is the biggest problem. You know, they say sunlight is the best disinfectant. But if you're waiting for someone else to shine the light for you, then you are only going to see what they want you to see. I think it's about time that the American people stop depending on others to filter their news for them, to curate what they should and should not see. I think it's time for them to do like I do, get media from multiple sources and weed through it yourself. And then trust, but verify, meaning you find sources that you tend to trust, but you still double check what they say just to be sure that it's true. And that, I believe, is how you be a wise and functional citizen. You can find out more about my show, get all the latest podcasts, just go to AmericaOutloud.com, look under our shows or schedule, and you can share the blessings of liberty to yourself and your posterity.
Pay the bills, stay out of jail, love the neighbors, and have a few good friends.